Could someone develop a pure musicophilia without any accompanying changes in personality or behavior? In 2006, just such a situation was described by Rora, Smith and Warren in their striking case history of a woman in her mid-60s who had intractable temporal lobe seizures with a right temporal lobe focus. After 7 years of seizure activity, her seizures were finally brought under control by the anticonvulsant drug Lamotrigine, LTG. Prior to starting on this medication, Rora and his colleagues wrote, "This lady had always been indifferent to music, never listening to music for pleasure or attending concerts. This was in contrast to her husband and daughter, who played the piano and violin. She was unmoved by the traditional Thai music she had heard at family and public events in Bangkok, and by classical and popular genres of Western music after she moved to the United Kingdom. Indeed, she continued to avoid music where possible, and actively disliked certain musical timbres. For example, she would shut the door to avoid hearing her husband playing piano music, and found choral singing irritating. This indifference to music changed abruptly when the patient was put on Lamotrigine. Within several weeks of starting LTG, a profound change was noted in her appreciation of music. She sought out musical programs on the radio and television, listened to classical music stations on the radio for many hours each day, and demanded to attend concerts. Her husband described how she had sat transfixed throughout La Traviata and became annoyed when other audience members talked during the performance. She now described listening to classical music as an extremely pleasant and emotion-charged experience. She did not sing or whistle, and no other changes were found in her behavior or personality. No evidence of thought disorder, hallucinations, or disturbed mood was seen. While Rora et al. Could not pinpoint the precise basis of their patient's musicophilia, they hazarded the suggestion that during her years of incorrigible seizure activity, she might have developed an intensified functional connection between perceptual systems in the temporal lobes and parts of the limbic system involved in emotional response, a connection that only became apparent when her seizures were brought under control with medication. In the 1970s, David Baer suggested that such a sensory-limbic hyperconnection might be the basis for the emergence of the unexpected artistic, sexual, mystical, or religious feelings that sometimes occur in people with temporal lobe epilepsy. Could something similar have occurred with Tony Sicoria, too? Last spring, Sicoria took part in a 10-day music retreat for student musicians, gifted amateurs, and young professionals. The camp doubles as a showroom for Erika Vanderlinde Feidner, a concert pianist who also specializes in finding the perfect piano for each of her clients. Tony had just bought one of her pianos, a Bussendorfer Grand, a unique prototype made in Vienna. She thought he had a remarkable instinct for picking out a piano with exactly the tone he wanted. It was, Sicoria felt, a good time, a good place to make his debut as a musician. He prepared two pieces for his concert, his first love, Chopin's B-flat minor scherzo, and his own first composition, which he called Rhapsody, Opus 1. His playing and his story electrified everyone at the retreat. Many expressed the fantasy that they, too, might be struck by lightning. He played, said Erika, with great passion, great brio, and if not with supernatural genius, at least with creditable skill, an astounding feat for someone with virtually no musical background who had taught himself to play at 42. "What did I think, in the end, of his story?" Dr. Sicoria asked me. "Had I ever encountered anything similar?" I asked him what he thought and how he would interpret what had happened to him. He replied that, as a medical man, he was at a loss to explain these events, and he had to think of them in spiritual terms now. I countered that, with no disrespect to the spiritual, I felt that even the most exalted states of mind, the most astounding transformations, must have some physical basis, or at least some physiological correlate in neural activity.